Hello, Steve. Hello, Jill. It's time to game classy.
And then there's Steve. He's muted or not joined with his audio. There's Steve.
There we go. Whoa, it's magic. And Joe.
I don't know the words that song.
I guess I could also point with it's magic, you know. Never believe it's not Joe.
That's good. I like that. I'll appreciate it. I can dig that.
We hath done it.
It's been a while, Steve. We missed our last scheduled appointment, and now we have much to cover.
It's true. Do we have a lot to cover? Good.
Let's cover entertainment / controversy news first, should we? Shall we?
Ooh, yeah. I'm ready. As per usual, I'm out of touch. You're out of time.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Game Classy. I'm your host, Joe. With me is always my co-host, Steve.
Hey, how's it going there, everybody? I hope you're having a great day today, y'all.
Oh, we're going to do this in a Minnesotan accent? Oh, okay.
Well, you know, I feel it's okay, huh?
So, I don't know if I've talked about this in the podcast before, but I have a brother who lives in Minnesota. And he's, you know, from Chicago and everything like that. So, he has a normal Chicago accent. However, like, he's been up there for a while. So, every once in a while when I'm talking with him and his friends, they all of a sudden will start talking about something that's very Minnesotan, like hockey, and he completely changes. Like, you know, he sounds like me, and then all of a sudden he'll drop a little bit, and he'll be like, "Oh yeah, the hockey season this year was pretty intense," and so just like Jesus Christ,
that's really funny.
Yatham. So controversy, entertainment news, the Rings of Power have been slowly unveiled to us.
And they have been revealed.
Which, you know what? It could be terrible. I don't care. I'm just super excited to have more LOTR material for us.
Hey, it looks awesome to me.
Yeah, I mean, well, I shouldn't say it looks awesome because I haven't seen anything yet. I want to see it before
I make any judgments. I quite do mean that literally. It looks awesome.
Yeah,
I can't say anything else beyond that, because all I've seen is some pictures, which I think look great.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the pictures look that great. It's, you know, my biggest fear with Amazon is that Amazon, it's also that it's like a made for TV thing. It's a TV show. Yeah, it might have a little bit higher production value, but it's going to look different than something that's made for film. And that's always the case, which is, you know, why, you know, Lord of the Rings looks like it looks, and Wheel of Time looks like it looks.
I mean, I don't want to go too hard, but are you saying that $1 billion series is not enough money to produce a quality result?
No. Are you kidding me? It's not. I would like to think it is, Steve, but it's not.
You know, I mean, I'm gonna at least say that I'm gonna have to press X to doubt that it's not gonna look at least very excellent.
Well, you know, and it's all gonna depend on a lot of things, like Wheel of Time. You know, for as good as the show kind of still looked like a WGN Saturday afternoon, you know, adventure show. You know, it wasn't like it has to do with the cameras. It has to do with the filming. It just didn't look like a lived-in world. It looked like someone pulled off a bunch of costumes off a rack in New Zealand, and then they had a bunch of stunt actors working on a Sam Raimi show, you know? That's what it looked like to me.
Here's the thing, though. Did Wheel of Time cost $1 billion?
The Wheel of the Time keeps on burning. I don't know what I'll watch tomorrow.
Is it canceled?
No, it's actually got like 3 more seasons.
Ah, I see.
Which is actually funny, because I've only ever read the first Wheel of Time book. I have never read I've read half of book two, and then I just got so, it just got boring to me. And I was like, okay, I'm done with this. I can't do it anymore. There's like 30 books. I just don't have the effort to read all of the Wheel of Time books. Maybe a younger man, a younger Joe would have been able to do that. But even younger Joe stopped at book two.
I ain't got time to read.
Ain't got time to read, ain't got time to bleed.
That's right. If I'm reading, I need someone to read to me via an audiobook.
Yeah. Be a goddamn sexual Tyrannosaurus.
That's right. And in most cases, I don't want to hear an audiobook because I only need to hear something for like, I don't know, hour, maybe two while I'm walking. So usually that's, I listen to like podcast, spooky stories or something.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, audiobook wise, I finished off. Oh, actually, I can do a little tangent on this. I just started the Infinite and the Divine. It's a Black Library book. I kind of ran out. I finished the last Expanse book. None of my series have any new books coming out. So I was like, oh, I'll go back. Everyone's talking about how good this book is. Steve, you would absolutely adore this book.
Nice.
It is a book about two old Necrons who hate each other, who are constantly fighting over like one little artifact. So it's a constant back and forth. Like one person will steal it from one and then they'll steal it back. And then it is like probably one of the most non-Black Library, Black Library books I've ever read in my life.
So they made a Necron book about Statler and Waldorf.
Kind of. It's more like, yeah, Dwayne made the good, made a good analogy of it being like Doctor Who, kind of just like an episode of Doctor Who. Cause these like, I mean, yeah, they're Necrons, but they're just two old guys who know each other from a long time ago and know that they can't really kill each other going back and forth, you know, sniping at each other. It's pretty funny.
Nice. Yeah. It's been a while, so I will say once again, Dr. Pooh.
Dr. Pooh. I'll just say this. At one point, they're fighting, like the two of them are fighting a bunch of Eldark Exodites on a planet. Like they're fighting with each other, but they're also fighting Elder Exodites who are riding dinosaurs, and one of them just slams a ghost dart into the side of a dinosaur and the dinosaur explodes.
That's awesome.
I was like, this is what I want. This is what I always say is, like, Black Library books are not real literature at all. They're just fun stuff to take up time. They're like TV shows. Like, don't take them very seriously, and they're way more fun. That's what all Black Library books should be.
No way, dude. The 40K nerds are going to have your head.
You know, it needs to be serious. I need this. My grimdark. I need my grimdark. The god emperor of mankind, Donald Trump, will save us all.
Yeah. But anyway, Rings of Power. So we first saw the preview posters. There was like 13 preview posters, right? Some are 24 preview posters, and it was just their hands and stuff like that. You got to see some cool props and stuff that look cool, that look neat. I mean, I'll be the first to admit,
excellent teasers.
Yeah, there was one person who had a sword that had like the two trees of the elves on it, and I was like, oh, that's fucking cool. I think it was probably
probably.
So the guy that got to play Elrond is the guy who played young Ned Stark in Game of Thrones. And I thought he looked weird in Game of Thrones, and he kind of looked elvish. So then when he's actually playing an elf, I'm still like, yeah, he still looks weird. Like, even for an elf, he looks weird.
I mean, that's good, though. Elves should look kind of weird.
They should. And he, you know, he was trying to do a Sean Bean accent, which is, I guess he's from Yorkshire. Someone from one of our UK listeners will correct me on
that. I hear that Yorkshire has pudding, and I like pudding.
It's not the type of pudding you think, Steve.
Ah, then in that case, I won't like it.
No,
you just not calling gross blood things pudding.
No, that's not that. It's not blood pudding. You're like,
okay.
What it is it's a kind of a doughy, breadish pudding that has meat drippings on it.
You had me until you did the meat drippings. I like flan.
Yeah, no, this is not like this is a savory pudding.
Yeah, I'm not. You can miss me with the savory pudding.
It's actually very good. I've had it before. You have it with roast beef. It's like super simple. But the what was I going to say? Yeah, he does like he did a Yorkshire accent. He tried to at least do a Yorkshire accent in Game of Thrones and failed miserably. And I'd be interested to see what accent he's using in Lord of the Rings, because doesn't what's his face? Guy who played Elrond. Why can't I think of his name? Not Viggo.
Bean. Sheen Bean.
But what? Who played Elrond?
I was thinking of Boromir again. That would be, why can't I remember his name? Hugo Weaving.
Hugo Weaving, thank you. Isn't he like Australian or is he New Zealand?
I believe Hugo Weaving is New Zealand.
Yeah, so like you have Hugo Weaving and, you know, he doesn't do a British accent, but he tries to do a little bit of a British accent. Actually, he was born in Nigeria.
Hugo Weaving?
Yeah. And he mostly Australian, so there you go.
Oh, I see. Oh, fair enough. Yes. I admit I did not know. I just assumed because I knew there were many, many Kiwis in Loder.
Well, there's plenty. There are Australians as well. So you got to, you know, it's unless you hear them talking in like their normal accent, it's very difficult to tell the difference.
True.
Between a New Zealander and an Australian.
I actually can tell, believe it or not.
Yeah, I can too. You can look at the difference because I know Australians tend to wear thongs with sandals on. They tend to wear thongs with socks on. Yes.
I was going to say, is it because they all wear that Crocodile Dundee hat?
Yes. Yeah.
As is required by their laws.
If they challenge you with knifey spoony, it's an Australian.
Yes. Yes.
If they're grilling on their dick, then they're New Zealand. So
it all makes sense.
Yes, grilling out on the dick, they're they're New Zealand. if you're attacked by snakes, it's Australia.
Yeah,
if you're attacked by snakes or spiders or any of that stuff, it's Australia.
Something incredibly painful, venomous, and or both.
If you're attacked by mountain parrots, you're in New Zealand.
Mountain parrots?
I think that's New Zealand who's got the mountain parrots. They're very cute, but they destroy your car, apparently.
nice.
I don't know. I am making shit up right now.
That's all right. It's early. It's a Saturday.
This is just for funsies. It's not for realsies.
We are an entertainment podcast. None of our words reflect our true opinions, nor the opinions of our employers. Of course, our
entertainment with quotation marks around it. But the
entertainment purposes only.
Yes, with the fun part is also you have with the Ring of Powers is then they did full body shots like for Vanity Fair. I have two complaints. Which is my complaints are far different than other complaints, which I'll get into in a second. My one, the dwarven princess does not have a beard, which I feel is a fucking like, how the fuck do you fuck that up?
That is an outrage.
Like, it's not even like that to me just shows like blatant disrespect of all Tolkien lore. Like the fact that a dwarven woman does not have facial hair. Because however,
I will put a pin in this.
Okay.
They might explain it in the series.
You know, I'd like to believe that. However, I don't think that's true.
I'm not saying they will. I'm just saying they have a chance.
Yes.
They could even if it's a line of throwaway dialogue, they could at least explain. And that's something too. They only showed a few dwarves, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Two full body dwarf pics.
Right, and then there was just the princess, and then
Durin the Fourth.
Okay, so there's God, Durin.
You know what? Fucking, I'm a nerd. I'm gonna throw myself off a cliff like in fucking Midsummer. Nice. I shouldn't know the fact that was Durin the Fourth that quickly.
So Durin. So you have Durin, and then a princess. So all they need to do is one quick throwaway dialogue to explain why that princess doesn't have a beard. And we're okay.
Did she have her beard shorn by a dark elf pretending to be a light elf and they start the war of the beard?
There, you know, maybe.
Maybe.
We can't say for sure, can we?
Yes. That was the first thing. The other thing, they have a Galadriel. Galadriel is wearing full armor. It looks pretty good. My problem, Galadriel is not 6'4". Galadriel is supposed to be a tall woman. or a tall elf.
Well, I mean, then they kind of that's at least, I believe, in line with the Jackson trilogy, because
I don't care, Steve.
I agree with you.
Tim Lee needs to have his mama fetish.
I agree, but aren't elves supposed to be like 7 feet tall? Like, isn't that like the, like, aren't, if, no, if I'm not mistaken, aren't elves supposed to be very, very tall?
No, actually, Galadriel and Celeborn are supposed to be the same height, essentially, and they're supposed to be like the taller of the elves.
Mm.
Like, elves kind of top out at 6'4", 6'5". I'm sure they could get taller, but that it's not the average.
Okay.
So let's also think about it. Like, let's say elves are on average 6 foot tall. You got to think that most humans are probably like 5'6" in the Tolkien world. You know, they're not getting all the nutrition that they need. You know, they're like the Numenoreans, they could be like 6 foot tall, you know, because they're the big proud humans. They're like, you know, the humans of old. But then you have fucking the regular human who's scraping by on like in Gondor, who's just eating, you know, mince pies or whatever, and he's just like, oh, this is really good governor. He's only like 5'5" because he could also needs to be able to fit into a chimney so he can clean it out. That's what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because that's, you know, one of the way that Tolkien wrote it. So, you know, he was just looking at his average Brit, and so that's why everybody in Lord of the Rings is 5'6" and has bad teeth.
I see. Yes. Well, I'm willing to forgive them the height for now. We'll see.
We'll see. Yeah, they have a picture where Elrond is like about her height, which kind of bothered me because I was like, no, Galadriel needs to be tall.
Well, I will say that if the end result ends up only being extremely picky loader nerd gripes, I'm gonna be happy with this series.
Yeah, it probably won't. I mean, like. Because then we could get into the fact that they had a darker skinned elf and a darker skinned dwarf, and then people lost their goddamn minds.
Well, I mean,
I should say human generous.
It's pretty generous. It's generous referring to those types as people.
Yeah, they are chuds for sure. Because the dwarven princess is played by a black actress. You know, I saw it and I was like, fine, whatever. You know, it doesn't matter. It's a made up world. It's not a real world. And they're all like, dwarves work underground. They wouldn't have dark skin. It's like, what about in a fantasy world where magic exists?
Let's dial it back even a little bit. Mine's the fact that they're really just trying to coach their racism with whatever qualifiers they want.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Let's pull it back for a second. The beginning of that sentence says a dwarf, which is a literal fucking fictional fantasy race.
Exactly.
They can look like fucking anything. It does not matter.
Yes.
That's another thing too. That type of evolution, that change, if we're going to talk about, if we really want to get into like melanin and how fucking bodies work, that change takes so fucking long. It doesn't happen that fast. Like, if you had a dark-skinned race of people or a mixed-skinned race of people who lived above ground and then moved underground, say, and they only exclusively lived underground, eventually, maybe the melanin would fade. But that's maybe, because for that to fade, it would have to be over time, because the people who had darker skin would stop having babies, which is not going to make any sense in a societal way. Like, you live in the, to quote the Joker, we live in a society.
Yeah. Also,
so like, your skin doesn't just spontaneously fucking change. It's so fucking infuriating.
Also, it's fake. It's all fake. It's fiction.
Yes.
It's all made up. It doesn't matter.
Let's again go back to the, going back to the, start of the sentence, or saying a dwarf,
yeah,
or an elf. Like if you were about to say an elf and then talk about the real world, you've got a mistake.
You're a
mistake.
Failure as a human being. Yeah, and that's like what it comes like for me. I'm just like, I just don't care. Just, you know, my only thing is just make it good. I don't care about anything else. Just make it good. Make the acting good. Make the directing good. Make the music good. Make the sets look good. Make the costumes look good. That's it. That's all I care about. Like if that's the one thing we got to worry about, let that be the one thing we worry about. Like the acting. Like, because trust me, if there's bad acting, bad line reading, bad dialogue, that's going to hurt the show more than anything else.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And as I say, let you know, if those assholes want to watch something, let them go watch Triumph of the Will, because that will be the only thing that will make them happy. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, again, it all comes down to, like, I don't care. And actually, at this point, it's just an upside because it makes racists big mad. So, like, sweet.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, super sweet on that one. I'm waiting to watch it so I can see if it's any good before I go, meh, it's bad. I mean, it'll probably be just meh. I mean, it's an Amazon show. Amazon shows are generally pretty meh.
Yeah, I've never seen an Amazon show, so I don't know.
I mean, they're fine. As I say with all these streaming shows, it's like the problem with streaming shows, hands down, is that there is no studio saying, you know, if you did this, it might be a little bit better. Now, you could say that's studio meddling. That has never led to anything good. You'd be surprised, because you know what? The good studio meddling, you never find out about. But the bad studio meddling is the stuff you always hear about. The good studio meddling is like, you didn't even know that the studio was gave them notes on that and told them to change that because it would make for a better show.
Well, I mean, I think usually that it, like, I mean, I don't want to say for all of it, but from what I've seen, the good versus bad is usually pretty simple. It's like how deep they shove their hand into the pie is usually it. Cause like, if you say something like, I think it's the difference between a studio saying you need to cut this scene specifically,
yeah,
or versus the studio saying you need to cut 10 minutes from this film's runtime.
Yeah. So yeah.
I'm a fan of the, you need to cut 10 minutes from this film's runtime. That's good meddling. Saying they need to cut a specific thing, that is bad meddling. That's how you get things like, you don't see, what's his name? Fucking, what was the fucking dildo's name in The Hobbit? The fucking, the sycophant.
Alfred?
Alfred, yeah. Like, Alfred just, in the theatrical release of The Battle of Five Armies, Alfred just vanishes. Like, there's just, like, hanging plot lines that, like, are not resolved because they were just cut. You have to watch the full cut to see what happens to Alfred and a bunch of other characters.
Yeah, because that's the way it's supposed to be.
It's just odd.
Just that's a subplot that shouldn't have existed to begin with, but whatever.
regardless of the quality of said subplot, the like, leave it, like, just leaving it like, wait, what happened to that guy? Like, there's been a very similar situation in other movies as well, where like a character like just kind of like doesn't show up again. Obviously nothing to the level of like Tommy Wiseau characters, but like in the room where there's characters who, like, yeah. Or like the lady who's like, I have cancer, and then like she never shows up again. It was like this like big plot point and she's just gone.
Well, yeah. I mean, you're talking about Tommy Wiseau movie, so let's
yeah, I mean, that's obviously quite silly, but
My dog.
Oh man,
I hate her so much.
I have to say, the disaster artist is a lot more fun than actually watching The Room, I think.
Yes, 100%. I think anybody who watches The Room is a sadist. So
I was big fan. I didn't really like The Room, but man, did I like the disaster artist.
Yeah. So Rings of Power, I'm interested. They have me. Apparently they're supposed to be like an actual like preview or a trailer during the Super Bowl. I will not be watching the Super Bowl, but I'll gladly watch it online afterwards.
The Super Bowl. More like the Stupid Bowl. Bam! Got him!
Yeah. Superb Owl. I do enjoy the Superb Owl.
Yes. I think it's really funny that they managed to get that and set up that amusing joke.
But yeah, so I'll watch that and I'll see. It'll probably won't even be anything. It'll probably just be like Galadriel standing on a mountain while like wind is whipping her around her skirts as it's blowing, and they're like, the rings of power. And it's since we're in the age of fucking who's that guy, Hans Zimmerman's fucking scores, it's just gonna be like, wow,
the Mandalorian.
And that's what you're gonna see here in the background.
What if there's dubstep? Aragorn throws on shades and lights up a huge spliff and then is like ready to rock.
Dubstep, what is this, 2011?
Yeah, it's early 2000. It's late 2009. We're ready to blast out the dubstep.
Listen to some dubstep, drinking some Four Loko. It's time.
I think Surge still existed at that time too.
Probably. Yeah. Oh God, I don't even remember anymore. I'm getting old. So let's get into some gaming news, shall we?
Gaming news.
Games Workshop put another nail in their coffin. I know that I say that and it's like, it's probably not going to be that bad. You know, they'll survive, but they added another 5% price increase. Even though they had record-breaking profits. Last year, they actually did take a little bit of a hurt on their profits or on their stock price just because they had a bad year. Or I don't even really know why. I think it was they had a bad year due to shipping and shit like that. It was more supply chain issues than anything else.
Line no go up enough. Line need go up. Line need always go up. Why no line go up? Line go up always. Line not go up always? That's impossible.
That's impossible. So yeah, they had a 5% price increase, and on that same day that they announced the 5% price increase, I actually found a file trove of beautiful Necrons that are almost one for one. So I'm now able to print an entire Necron army and not even look at the Games Workshop stuff because they're nearly identical.
Real question of that is, why are you going to print a Necron army?
I don't have to, but I can. Actually, I printed the Infinite and the Divine from the book, but that's a different story because I just wanted to print them. Because I was like, I read about you in a book, so now I'm going to interact with you on miniature form. I'm the Divine.
I read about you in a book. Now you're my toys.
Now you're my toys. I'm going to put you in the cupboard with the Indian, and you're going to come to life. That movie raised so many ethical questions.
Did it?
Yeah.
Were they truly alive? Were they truly alive?
Exactly.
Or were they elaborate automata?
Like, did they have genitalia?
Well, I don't know.
If you touch their genitalia, are you molesting them? Or are you just playing with your toys? I'm confused by the whole thing. Ethical dilemma, Steve.
I mean, is it, but it could be a Toy Story thing.
Are they like flesh golems?
I would say that they are automata that are operating within their programming. So like the Indian in the cupboard is operating as his toy design would have you believe. I believe. I mean, it's been an extremely long time since I've seen that film, but if I remember correctly, everyone was exactly what they were, and they didn't have higher thought outside of their limited scope. Because like if you put like a toy soldier in there, like that's all that character, or that's all that when it animated, that's all it was just a soldier. It didn't have like any other.
So if you put a vibrator in there, it would just vibrate.
Yeah, it would just vibrate.
Yeah, because let's say you took a He-Man figure, right? Let's say you took a man-at-arms figure and you remove the legs and the arms and you glue them onto the vibrator and you put that in the cupboard. How would that work?
Does the vibrator have a head?
Does it need a head? These are the questions asking.
I'm asking if what if you have attached arms to the vibrator, right?
Yes.
I believe in that instance, what it would do is it would use the arms to attempt to find any hole to penetrate.
Okay. So just serving its function.
Right. It would serve its function as well as it possibly can given its form. So it would use the arms to propel itself to try and, you know, insert wherever.
What does this say about Data?
Well, see, data is a different story because data does not have limited parameters. Data is a positronic brain, so he's designed.
But don't we all have limited parameters, Steve? We
actually
can't usually operate outside of our operating system. See, this is the bigger. These are the bigger ethical questions that I have.
Here you go. Here you go. If you put a data toy into
layers.
The Indians in the cupboard. Now that is a layer, because then it would be data. Because then that would break all of the previous things I said. Because then it would be data. It would be something that can learn and be
some sort of simulacra.
A simulacra, yes.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah. See, this thing that's the difference, because data was not a pre-made. Archetype. Data was something that, data was an attempt to create life. So I think where you would get to the ethical dilemma questions with Indian in the Cupboard specifically would be if you yourself handmade things to put in there. Or, and here's another, and this is the real like questions for Indian in the Cupboard again, is if you made a clay figure, like you just made like a little clay guy,
like a golem, like of Jewish lore.
I don't know what would come out in that instant, because the Indian in the Cupboard is a very succinct story. It doesn't go into like, what if you put something that isn't normally meant to go in there. Now there's the other thing too, where maybe if you put a data figure in there, or if you put your own little homunculi that you've made, maybe they don't animate. Maybe it can only truly animate toys that are both form and function.
So only official toys of the Hasbro Corporation?
Yes, or whoever owns the, or whoever, whatever corp, whatever giant megacorp made the cupboard, obviously.
Yes, it's the cupboard. It's the cupboard's made by Hasbro?
Yeah, this cupboard's made by Hasbro. You can't put a Gundam in there. Those are made by Bandai.
I wanted
my Gundams to move. Sorry. You're gonna have to wait for Bandai to come out with the cupboard.
The problem is that your Gundams are not toys. They're articulated models.
It's true. There are Gundam action figures, though, which are separate from the model line.
Yeah, so you have to put a Gundam action figure into there, not a model.
But then you fall back into the whole thing where it's not going to work because the Gundam action figure is Bandai, not Hasbro.
You have to buy a Bandai cupboard. I get it.
Yeah.
So getting back, Games Workshop did a price increase. It's just everybody buy 3D printers at this point. Just do that. You could literally, I have files to print every 40K army at this point in almost, I would say, one-to-one fashion. That is, that they look identical to the ones that Games Workshop produces, but it's better because instead of like 8-piece Necrons, I have 2-piece Necrons, or it's a 16-piece Rhino. I have a 1-piece Rhino that I just printed as 1-piece, and it just comes out, and I'm like, yay, I don't have to do anything to this. Those exist. Like you say, like, oh man, but part of the Games Workshop experience is I really enjoy building the models. No, you don't. That's Stockholm syndrome right there. You don't
know. I think there's like 0.11% of people who like building. And then there's 0.11% of people who like building, and then everything else is like somewhere in between of like some sort of coping mechanism about having to build your models.
You know, it's for me, I find funny is that I enjoy building the models, but I enjoy building the resin models that are only 4 pieces instead of like 20 pieces. That's so much nicer.
It really put it into perspective for me the other day too, because I wanted to, there was another day I was like, man, I really fucking want to paint. And then I looked over and I was like, fuck, none of my shit's built. So I just did something else.
Well, I did some crisis suits for Tau just for fun. And those are actually a decent amount of pieces if you find them online, because, crisis suits are super poseable. Mm-hmm. And I was like, ugh, I hate doing this. I hate the super multiple part poses like this. Just give me the pose that give me one or two poses and I'm okay with that. You don't have to do all this shit. It's obnoxious and annoying.
Well, that's why I like the AOS models a lot more, because the AOS models are usually like single poses, or like you can put like this arm on and that's it.
Yeah, I some of them are good. What's it called, Shades, Underworlds Those war bands are generally end up looking pretty nice. Every once in a while, they have a weird seam, and you're just like, why did they put this seam right here? This is the worst place in the world for that seam to be, like where the two pieces connect. It's really dumb for that in that place right there. But normally, it's like, I'd say like 80% of the time, it's fine.
Nice. Yeah, and for me, it really put it in the my thoughts was I used to like building armies and stuff. But then I remembered it was because it was mostly gluing single part metals into bases.
And then you're like, oh, I hate gluing single part metals into bases.
I mean, that part wasn't good, but it was at least fast.
Oh, yeah. Did you see the news about Underworlds, by the way?
No.
They have the new book for Warcry that just got released either this weekend or next weekend. I don't know when it's actually dropping. Is allowing you to play your Warhammer Underworlds warbands in Warcry now.
Mm.
So I think that that's one of the coolest things I've seen in a long time, and I'm actually kind of really excited about it. So all the season one through, I want to say four of Underworlds are going to have all of their warbands have stats so that you could play it in Warcry.
That's pretty cool. If you find anyone playing Warcry, that'll be sweet.
Yeah. I mean, Warcry is actually, it's not super popular right now. But it does have its.
Well, I mean,
its
nothing's supporters. Popular right now, to be honest.
Actually, I was just looking at something that is doing really well right now, and I can't think of what it is.
Tabletop Simulator is doing well right now.
No, people are out playing. Actually, game stores are pretty crowded. Every time I've gone to one of our friendly local gaming stores, it's always been kind of packed with players.
All right, fair enough.
Yeah. I told you guys, COVID's over, Steve. I know you like your Howard Hughes. I'm staying in my house in perpetuity in a plastic, in the boy in the bubble.
Hey, man, I haven't even got so much as a cold in 3 years.
I know. Well, you have the moops, you know, so you're the boy in the bubble. You are John Travolta, Jake Gyllenhaal. You are the boy in the bubble. But people are done with COVID. It's over. They're lifting the indoor mask mandate at the end of the month. Say, Levy, did I tell you I had COVID?
No.
Yeah, I got it. It was fine. I was over it. I was over it in 3 days. They wouldn't let me go back to work for 10, so that was kind of nice. But
yeah, well, I mean, you had it in like the optimal scenario, right? Vaxxed, boosted, caught it.
Oh yeah, exactly. It was I it wasn't as bad because I was fully vaxxed.
Yeah, I was talking to a friend who has to take they work in public space, so they have to take rapid tests every day.
Yeah,
and they just take one in the morning. And they're like, rapid test, and then he's like, oh, I have COVID, and he just like he calls his boss. He's like, I got COVID. He's like, oh, and like I was talking to him about it. And I was like, did you get any? He's like, no. He's like, I didn't have a single symptom. He's like, I woke up fine, just like any other day, and just was like, oh shit.
Yeah, I mean, I had symptoms. I had a stuffy nose and a headache, but that was about it.
Yeah, it's like barely anything, which I mean, hey, you know, it's one of the I was talking to one of my coworkers about it. It's like it's one of those, it's a very insidious this was pre-vaccination anyway, but like it was still, we talked about how it was just a very insidious virus because it's like the range of the symptoms was so just like absurd because it's like, yeah, some people they're just like, I got a little bit of a stuffy nose, can't really taste much, and then like the other person's just like, I am dying.
Yeah, I never lost the taste. I always had that
the stuff.
I always had the taste. I never lost the taste.
That I believe that's the relaunch in the end of the movie. I believe they relaunched the stuff as the taste, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, is that it? I
mean, yeah, it's the taste. If anyone's never seen the movie The Stuff, I highly recommend the movie The Stuff. It's a very good film. Well, it's a good movie. I don't know if I would say it's very good, but at the end the corporate scumbos determine that they can reduce the content of the original The Stuff by cutting it with other items, and they relaunch it as The Taste.
Yeah, that's a great movie. I enjoy The Taste. The Stuff.
It's a good movie. I think I recommend it to anyone.
I never lost my sense of taste, but I'm also, it's one of those things right now. It's like, hopefully the under five vaccine will be done soon, and then I'm not going to worry about people who don't get vaccinated. And I know that there are some people who are like, Adepticon is coming up in a month. And there are people who are very upset that Adepticon is charging this year to walk the floor because of safety issues. Like, you have to show your Vax card to get in, to get your ticket. So you can't just walk the floor like you used to. You have to have a ticket. And some people are very upset about that. And I'm just
my freedom.
And I realized that that's why they separated the historical gamers to a different section of the convention, like a different hotel.
That's the COVID ward.
That's the COVID ward. Yeah.
As I said on Facebook, the reason I dunk on historical gamers so much has very little to do with historical games. And a lot to do with historical gamers.
Did we talk about that on the air about the fucking Flames of War guy?
No.
I don't know if we talked about him. Like, what a douchebag. I am so upset with the fact that this British company who fully aligns with America's policy is making us wear these masks and blah, blah, blah. Yep. And it's like, whatever this case, we're not, counting, you know, Adepticon in the Nationals and blah, blah, blah. Like, this guy who's he's in peak comorbidity for COVID. Like, if this guy caught COVID, he would die. He is a Herman Cain Award winner in progress.
He's an American historical wargamer. That's like the three words I just said has all comorbidities.
And like,
yeah, being an American is one. That's a comorbidity. Being into historical game, being into that kind of history, that's two. And then historical wargamer, that counts as two. So I'm gonna say that's four.
Yeah. I mean, hey, I love all of those things. It's just I am fully vaccinated and I also have healthy interests and tastes.
But you and I are Americans. We both have that comorbidity. Yeah, that is one.
We do have the American comorbidity. But now I have super antibodies for at least a month or something like that. I don't remember how long.
You're boosted. You're broadcasting your 6G. You can go on the internet anywhere. Yeah.
That's me harnessing the 6G. I'm playing 4D like chess it. On my 6D.
Hell yeah.
So I don't remember where I was going with it. Oh, it's with Adepticon, with the
we're dunking on historical nerds.
Dunking on historical nerds. They suck. Woo! Yeah. Nah, there's some quite lovely people who play historical games. I just find it funny that like the vast majority of people who are upset about it are going to be that. And don't you love it when they make announcements like that on their YouTube channel? It's always like them sitting in front of their computer screen. But the thing is that the camera's off to the side. So they're kind of not looking at the camera, but kind of looking at the camera. Like, it's weird, like how that looks. And like, you could see into their, like their very sad existence of their bedroom as they're making those announcements.
Yeah, it's great.
Like, don't get me wrong. Really, like if people saw my sad existence here, that would, I would, it's nothing to laugh at, but at the same time, I'm not broadcasting that out to the world.
Right. I mean, that's it's like Lenny, you know, he didn't mean to broadcast that the wall of the house fell down. So please don't tell anyone how I live.
Yeah, exactly. Except he's doing tell everybody how I live.
Yes, exactly. He's doing the opposite. He tore his own walls down and was like, hey, tell everybody how I live.
Oh, good. Other Games Workshop news. They released their, I think since the last time we talked, they've kind of shown the entire Eldar range, new plastic Eldar range.
Yes, there's like, they finally are updating some of those extremely ancient minis.
Ancient. Like second edition ancient.
Yes.
But I don't think that they're updating the Grav Falcon, which is one of the oldest models. Like that thing is like from 96.
You know, the weird thing about that is like, I don't agree that there shouldn't be a new kit, but that kit is like unlike the Lehman Russ, which has like the terrible segments where you have to put like the tank treads together.
Yeah,
the Falcon Grav Tank kit, for lack of a better term, I think is pretty perfect. Like, having put together a decent chunk of Falcon Grav Tanks, like, I don't have any like serious gripes with that kit. Like, so I guess you could just
yeah, my problem
is you can do a more detailed one, I guess.
Yeah, my problem is that the Falcon grav tank is a bitch to put together. It's a pain in the ass to put together. Like, it could be easier. Like, you've done them in the past. They weren't as bad as some models, but they're still like really shitty. Like, they're a shitty experience to put together.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, they could definitely do a more contemporary kit design, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think they did new bikers not too long ago. Not too long ago, but a while ago.
Yes. So let's say not too long ago in Games Workshop terms.
In Games Workshop terms, yes. So they have definitely have new Guardians that look nice. They have new Rangers finally, because those were those were like pre-second edition. Those were Rogue Trader, I want to say, models that they had. They never updated them since Rogue Trader. Maybe second edition. I'm not 100% sure on them. New Dark Reapers, which I think look shitty. They look like the old Dark Reapers, which I thought looked shitty. So the new Dark Reapers, of course, are going to look shitty.
I like Maugen Ra because his gun is called the Mauganator.
The Mauganator. That model's fucking crazy. It's fucking
shitty. I love that model.
I don't like
those. Those are my first. I mean, he's legit a second edition model, though.
The new Maugen Ra you don't like?
Oh, I didn't see the new one.
He's got like a bunch of like fucking like spinny cloaks on the bottom, so he's being held up by bits of his cloak, so that's kind of obnoxious. So I keep that in mind. There's new Avatar, which looks nice. It's huge. You knew that was coming out, though. They were gonna do that.
Oh yeah, obviously.
Yeah.
Aspect Warriors.
There's a few. So I think that the Aspect Warriors that they haven't done updates to are the Fire Dragons and the Striking Scorpions, if I'm not mistaken.
That is a shame, because the Fire Dragons and the Striking Scorpions are both in dire need of new models.
because they had the new Howling Banshee one that came out in that box set with the new plastic Howling Banshees, which were nice.
Yes.
And now I think they did the new Maugen Ra, and I'm not 100% sure if they did the Dire Avenger one. They probably did. I haven't been following it that much because I'm not that big of an Eldar fan, and I have better plastic resin Eldar files that if I wanted to use.
I just don't follow anything with 40K. I have no desire to ever play 40K ever again. So
yeah, well, I was talking with you about that, is that I'm very much with all of this like updates to the printing. I've been interested in 40K again, like not like hardcore, but it's just like, but every time I look at the ninth edition rules, I'm just kind of like, this is too much. This is way too complicated. It should not be that complicated.
No, it's way too much.
Yeah. It's just like, there doesn't need to be that much. So I was looking, and I think maybe some of the people on the podcast who listen can kind of chime in, but the best edition either has to be third or fifth. I've kind of come down to that. You say that the third best edition is probably third, right?
Yeah. I think third is, I believe most people would agree that third is probably the best. I found second edition the most appealing, but I wouldn't say it's like the best rules wise, but it's the most appealing to me.
Yeah.
Because it's still very weird.
Yeah. Like third edition is, here's my case for third edition. I will argue both third and fifth. So here we go. Third edition had a very streamlined rule set. Every army pretty much had a book in third edition. But here's the thing. Third edition was super duper vanilla. Everything kind of felt the same.
No, that was fourth edition. Listen
to me, what I'm saying here. Third edition, everything in an army kind of felt the same. There was not a lot of flavor in terms of like Eldar. All those Eldar armies were kind of very just kind of plain. But then they released Craft World Eldar. And so you could maybe do that. And but even the Craft Worlds were kind of identical. The guard all kind of felt identical. There was no like there was not a lot of customization in the armies. All of the space marines that you would get, like the Blood Angels, Dark Angels, aside from like one special unit, all kind of felt the same. It was the same problem with sixth edition fantasy. Like people think you and I think very fondly in sixth edition fantasy, but sixth edition fantasy armies were actually kind of boring because they only had like half the units that we remember. All the units that we remember were from seventh and eighth edition.
there's a caveat to this.
What's that?
And that is third edition was terribly balanced. The reason all of those armies felt the same is because you only took the good stuff, and the good stuff was very, very narrow.
Yeah.
So, like, there was tons of choices you could take in an Imperial Guard army to make your Imperial Guard army extremely unique and lose every game.
But even still, it's not like there was, like, that much difference. Like, there was, like, on the outside, a Talarn army and a Cadian army were just the same model, and were the same army just with different models. Like there was no real like impetus to take like a Talarn army. Like there was no like Talarn section or like Talarn special rules or anything like that. That shit just did not exist. No Vestroians. There was no special Vestroian rules.
The Vestroians.
It was the Vestroians. Da, 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 da. I don't know why I was doing the Havadagila, but.
Fourth edition took that actually and escalated it.
Yeah, fourth edition it was not great. That's why I said it's between 3 and 5. 5 actually had a lot of variety, but the thing that in my research and going through a lot of the books with fifth edition is that fifth edition was designed to be non-competitive. I know this seems weird, but in looking at like production diaries and like journals and stuff that was written at the time, the biggest complaint was that this game could not be played on a competitive level. And Games Workshop purposely made it that way to get away from grand tournaments and tournaments in general with 40K. For some odd reason, there was a push during 5th edition 40K to get away from the hyper-competitive angle. Mm-hmm. And if you look back at it, like the 5th edition, kind of like that point where people realize that about 5th edition has started to fall, and the rise of War Machine is a hyper-competitive game, actually kind of line up. Like, War Machine was on the rise at that point, and it kind of peaked right as 5th edition started going down. Mm-hmm. And then when you had 6th edition, that's when War Machine really took off. Like,
yeah.
Like, and then outgrew its britches.
I think 6th edition was pretty universally hated.
Yeah. So that's why I didn't include that on the list at all. Seventh and eighth are kind of identical. Seventh, eighth, and ninth are kind of identical for 40K. The sixth edition's right out. So it's between third and fifth. So I'm kind of leaning towards fifth because I like the idea of a non-competitive, very themey type game. So I think that's where I'm going with that. But if you know, our listeners have some ideas on it, I am more than happy to entertain those thoughts and call them stupid.
My fave is still second. That second edition box was just too cool.
Yeah, I mean, I like second. The thing is like second is when you play second edition or you collect second edition, you're an old hammer player at that point, Steve. You're an old hammer player.
I mean, if you're going to go back in time, no one should be playing it now.
Back in time, I'm down. Bam, bam, yeah,
those games are old and shitty for a reason. And saying that they were better is like very much like rose colored glasses, like up the ass. Because like perfect example, like OSR, I think OSR is very cool. However, I've said this before, like playing a contemporarily designed game inspired by old school role playing games is a vastly superior experience than playing a legit old role playing game.
Yes, I agree.
Because you can take the things about the old games that actually sucked, but keep the things about the old games that were actually good. Like, for example, no laundry list of skills for your character. That being out is good. hit matrices, not good. Let's get rid of that.
Yeah, that's not great.
Yeah, so that's where I stand. And I think if you were to do a second edition redux and like fix the things that were actually weird about the edition, but kept the same vibe and the like army size, I think second edition would be where I would want to be in those regards.
I want to be where the people are.
If you well, you're not playing second edition Warhammer 40,000, that's for sure.
If you go and you look at the what's it called, the rule books for Osprey miniatures games, that's very OSR adjacent. They're not,
yeah, it's more like Frostgrave and stuff.
Not Frostgrave. Frostgrave is North Star. It's a different. That's different. I'm talking like Osprey does these rule sets that are like they're all warband kind of oriented, but they're very much Pulp Alley esque, where there's a lot more role playing kind of involved with the miniatures than as opposed to competitiveness. Because I think I said it best, where it's like, well, I hate to toot my own horn. I said it best when I said, Osprey games are rules where you go, wait, that can't be the rule. And then you look up the rule and you're like, wait, that can't be right. And then you're like, well, I guess we have to dice roll it because it doesn't make any sense.
That's great.
That's where we are on that one. The speaking of role playing and minis games, did you see, I showed you those boxes. I sent you, you looked at those box sets, right? That Games Workshop putting out for the big box stores.
Yeah, they're nice.
Yeah, they actually have a Warhammer Quest one coming out, which
I saw that. I thought that was really cool to have the characters be miniatures and then the enemies be tokens. That was great.
It's a neat little concept. I'm interested. And plus, if you have the actual miniatures, because they're all Silver Tower miniatures, if you have Silver Tower, you could just use those minis.
That actually had me think about minis games. So like, I was thinking about this the other day because I was like, for a very brief moment of time, I had a dalliance with thinking about picking up the Bloodborne board game.
That's the I don't know that one.
Bloodborne is like, it's made by the same guys who made Dark Souls. Bloodborne is kind of like the weird Lovecraftian.
Oh, okay. Okay.
One.
I know what you're talking about.
People love fucking Bloodborne. Like, people love Bloodborne. People who don't even like give a shit about Dark Souls, like, there's like, my favorite game is Bloodborne.
Okay.
And I get it. But Bloodborne is very cool. The aesthetics are awesome. The story is really cool. It's Lovecraftian. Like, it's a very badass game. I like it a lot. And it's also one of the games that, it's more fun to watch people play Bloodborne than Dark Souls, which is interesting, but like, I couldn't tell you why that is either. But anyway, they did a board game, and the board game has, you know, everything. And obviously everything has models and blah, 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 blah. And that was eventually what actually like de-sold me on it. Cause I was just like, I don't fucking want to paint like 30 Yharnam villagers and like a bunch of like ghouls and werewolves. Like, I actually don't want to paint fucking 200 models for a board game.
There's so many expansions in this game. I'm looking at it right now. I'm like, holy shit.
So many expansions. They have everything. But that actually got me thinking. And then I thought about HeroQuest too, because even HeroQuest has too many minis for me. Like,
many miniatures nowadays.
That's that, like, legit. However, that Games Workshop game actually kind of put it into perspective for me. And I think that there is an like, this is obviously just a very personal thing for me, but I think there's an optimal middle ground where you have, like, if I were to design a board game that I wanted to do, like, in the vein of Dark Souls or Bloodborne, I think you should, if you want to have, maximum return for like kind of everyone. I mean, it wouldn't sell because people love buying games with thousands of miniatures to stick in a closet and never actually look again. Because as I've said before, people who buy board games don't play board games; they hoard board games, so they can post a picture of their like 17 Kallax shelves in their basement that are just completely full of board games that they never play to get Reddit karma.
Reddit karma.
Yeah, the Reddit karma is not going to pay back the credit card debt from all those board games, my friend. So what I would do is, like, if I was going to like make Bloodborne myself, the characters would have miniatures. All of the goons, like, if they are goons, they are tokens. If they are mini bosses, they are miniatures. If they are bosses, they are miniatures. So instantly, you cut so many of the models out of that game. So many.
Yeah. Like, I mean, that makes sense.
And you'd still have all of the things that will make the game good. You'll still have all the encounters. And when the fight, it's because it's exact. And the reason I feel so like, duh, it was such a dumb moment for me because as someone who DM'd a lot and DM'd with models that he was building and painting, me, I realized that painting skeletons and goblins fucking sucks. Not just because you have to paint a bunch of them, but because they die so fucking fast. They're very irrelevant.
I love just painting skeletons. Skeleton painting is so relaxing to me.
check out this like cool like 10 skeletons and like three zombies and like whatever, and like you throw up the D&D encounter, your players like murk through them in like 5 minutes. You take your carefully painted models and put them away. Maybe they'll come back again at some point. But I was just thinking about that, and I was like, I got away from doing that with D&D because of that. And I got away from just having models for D&D because of that, because stuff just dies so fast. But where models ended up being very cool in D&D is when it would be like a hill giant and like a rock troll. Like the encounter is a hill giant and a rock troll. The minis are great there because like, because it's like, oh shit, this is like a big deal. So I started to think about it, and I think that miniatures for role playing and for board games by extension, because, and I do specifically mean dungeon crawl board games like Bloodborne and HeroQuest and stuff, if the encounter is meaningful, there should be miniatures. If it's chaff, or if they're like trash mob add-ons like minions in fourth edition, which is I still can't believe they didn't keep that rule for fifth edition, then they should just be a token or something that's just more just like represents, you know, where they are. I just don't see why you like need so many models for trash mobs, essentially.
No, I get what you're saying. Like, yeah, my feeling is, and I've kind of gotten to this, is that most, if a board game has minis in it, those minis have to be very good for me to want to paint them. Or, you know, something similar. Like, it has to be a game that I'm going to be invested in order to paint those minis. I'm not going to paint minis on... I'm looking at the Bloodborne minis. They're kind of cool, but I probably would just paint the main guy. Like, maybe do contrast paints for the other ones, but that's about it. Like, I wouldn't... I was actually... someone pointed me to a video about contrast paints and about what the alternatives are and for other companies and stuff like that, blah, 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 blah. But the one thing he did say that like really that resonated with me is just like, yeah, if you're going to paint with contrast paints, get a cheap brush, because man, these great paints really fuck up your brush. And I'm just like, yeah, man, I feel that 100%.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You got to use your contrast brushes. There's a separate set of brushes.
Yeah. You have to, yeah. That's a completely separate set, but you know, that's what I'm like the Bloodborne stuff. It's like, it's fine, but I'm not painting six copies of the same mini for this board game.
Yes. Especially, exactly.
Yeah.
I do think contrast color coding is also fine. Like if I were to, like, I mean, I'm not going to, but if I were to be like, you know what, I am gonna get Bloodborne, what I would do to both A, maintain my sanity, and B, have visually distinct models, is you just do just solid, like you basically make them into like the cool, you know, like when old games like HeroQuest and stuff, when they did the plastic injection and like the goblins were green plastic, the skeletons were bone plastic, so on and so forth. You just do that with contrast paints. So like if they were like Yharnam townsfolk or whatever, I spray them, they get a brown contrast wash. If they're gargoyles, I spray them, they get a gray contrast wash. And that's it. Like nothing more. It's just so you can be like, these are game pieces and you can tell them apart very easily at a glance now because they're color coded.
Game classy.